Hello, everyone. This is a SuperSoldierForum.com and YPXNews.com interview. I'm here with Molecule Man, and he wants to talk about the Council of Nine. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, there's things I talk about and things I'm willing to go for, but I think if it's good enough for society and good enough to know, I've been working on this for 10 years and finally got my foot in the door. I'm going to become the newest member of the Council of Nine. There's still only nine members. And what I've been told is it's very, very rare timing that these members get replaced. And so these members have been in control. It's hard, you know, it's hard to say if you think they're the highest council, the highest control group, but they are certainly a main controlled group. So you've known them as the Anunnaki, the Olympians, the Asgardians, the gods. And guess what? I get now, I've been trying for a council. I've been dreaming to be on their council. I knew I was destined. And I just got the opportunity just a couple days ago. And I think it's going to be official here by the end of March, where I'll actually, what it is, each member gets a relic or an item that possesses an entity called a shade. The shade is like, God knows how old it is. These shades are probably thousands of years old, maybe millions, and they probably originate off-planet. Maybe interdimensional. The origin of the shade may not necessarily be known to the member, but the shade, when it's like an entity, it comes to possess you. And when that shade wants to reveal itself, I understand, it will. And you'll have questions. It's an entire symbiotic relationship between you and the shade. And you get to know the answers, not from the council, but from the shade. If the shade reveals it, then you're informed. If the shade doesn't reveal it, you're not ready. You know, the shade has to want to grow trust in you. Now, what is the shade? Is it a ghost? Is it a black, dark matter entity? I've suspected it's insectile in nature for years. We'll see. So I don't have the 100% proof exactly the nature of the shade. When I get the item, that's how it works. Now, does this council and I meet? Well, I think in ancient times they used to meet all the time. They even lived together. You know, they're royalty. I do think it was more of a closer-knit network. Now with the expansion of the population, I don't think all the members like live in one city or not even guaranteed to live in the same nation, but they do meet in hyperspace is what I understand. Where there is a council in meditation, you can actually connect to each other. And so that way, that single place cannot be invaded, doesn't require, you know, security, things like that. It's totally psychic in nature. And I think that's an updated protocol of what it used to be. So that way, there's no need to really meet at a table unless they have to or want to, but it's not required to have meetings. And because the reason why you can connect is because the shades are connected. All right, so that helps the human being. Now, is every member a human being? I don't know. You know, there could be some that are a little different. But one thing that they're all required is you have to be a vampire to join. So they are vampiric in nature. In fact, they're super enhanced vampires and may be the most powerful vampire group there is. They have definitely more advanced than your average vampire, and may be the most powerful. We're talking about real superhuman abilities, more advanced than even a normal vampire, which is still superhuman to a developed vampire. And there's different species of vampires, and some vampires, just on an ordinary level, may specialize in advanced psychic abilities, remote influencing abilities. Others may advance more in human abilities or mind control, emotional control. So, like, as a vampire, you drain from the ether, you drain from the aura, you drain from the soul. There's different kinds of vampires that specialize in different levels of draining, what they specialize in, what they can drain. And you use that, which is like the same thing as a vril. You know, there's different ideas. I mean, life force energy, chi. But see, I've said on a previous show, not all life force is the same. There's different kinds of life force that combine together. You know, kind of like body, mind, and soul. Or, you know, spirit, mind, soul. You know, you hear these overlapping terms, but they're really meant to be different kinds of life force. Kundalini, Thohat, Prana. These are different three kinds of, and like I said, anyone can refer to one of my previous shows that I define what the life force is. But with this Council of Nine, the one way you can have an insight is when you look at the Olympian gods, you pretty much have the most open story there is of how the Greeks viewed them. You know, whether you can't say that this is like an accurate portrayal, but it is not necessarily so far off base. There's the truth is somewhere in between mythology and history. But this council is very powerful. They disagree sometimes. In fact, that's probably why there's an opening membership. I think there's a major disagreement when if you make waves and the majority of the council goes against you and you continue to make waves, they remove that member. You know, if you probably have a rivalry going on for three or four centuries or just something just not going with the group, the group may get rid of your membership, and what they do is they already make a new item where the new member will receive, like me, I will receive an item where the shade is taken out of that being and given to a new being. So that's where I have to be careful, but I've been really trying for a long time, and finally. And what I understand is they actually have multi-dimensional capabilities. They can rewrite the past, they can control the future, rewrite alternate futures. If they can see the trend of where probability is going, they can rewrite it. Now, to approach them with just normal human consciousness, we can't do that because they're multi-dimensional in nature. You know, by the time you merge with this symbiotic relation with this shade, your whole understanding about past, future, what is reality changes. It's not the same definition anymore like the way we're trying to define it. So that's why they can rewrite the past, control events. And I do think that there's sometimes a friendly rivalry. Like if you look at Greek mythology, it was a really honest interaction. If you look at Sumerian mythology with the gods, it's a real honest interaction. There have been rivalries, there's been, you know, love-hate relationships, betrayal, you know, the whole drama nine yards. So it will still exist. It's not a smooth council, but they do see each other as like family. But I imagine there's a little bit of a mobster mentality, you know. They're willing to take you out because you're just a threat to the council. You know, so that's one thing I've got to really come to understand. And I do believe I've been on the council before. I kind of wonder if I was one of the first removals. But, you know, I'll let that. Anyone can be the judge of that, but there's a reason why I think I'm actually coming back because it's a long story that goes back and maybe I can make some changes. You know, we all talk about we want to make the world better. And who knows? We'll see what my membership could do. I don't know if the world was designed to be better. You know, how I think we're formed. If vampires are running the show, do you think it's really going to be a better world? I think an ideal vampire, a vampire who believes in good justice, well, it may be only a way of farming energy. You know, like I told you about the Nephilim protocol, the Nephilim are heroes designed to suck out the energy of those who believe the hero, like Hercules and, you know, demigods. This is designed to suck out those positive feelings. You know, when you have hope in one of the gods or the demigods, that's exactly a Nephilim design. So when a vampire plays the good guy, that's a special feeding item, a feeding routine. And it's designed especially at children, because what do you think they make children, the Illuminati uses the market to make children want after Spider-Man and Green Lantern and Superman and the Hulk, to wear these symbols on their pajamas, on their clothes, on their backpacks. It's if there's a certain age group specifically designed to go after that, that's the reason why, because the precious life force the vampire feeds on is to get closer to the seat of that soul, and the more refined and pure the energy, the more powerful it is when you get them at a young age. There's no sexual contact. I'm not talking about pedophilia. I'm talking about just pure raw energy sucking. And it doesn't have to happen at close range. A vampire who's not that powerful must suck at close range or have to do blood, literally. But that's not, advanced vampires don't have to do that. And in fact, if you think this is immoral, well, you know, like I said, look at the pigs and the cows and the chickens that you eat to stay alive. You're part of the chain. You only disagree with it because now you become part of the chain.
Are you saying you take energy from children?
Yeah, that's what the Nephilim were. That was one of their prime purposes were, is to suck energy from children, even from a distance. And when you create a theme, a story, the comic book line is like an example. That's the reason why lots of comic book characters pretty much go astray. Pretty much they don't achieve their goal, you know what I mean? On comics it looks like they do, but that's part of the directive. It's the comics were used to drain dry the superhuman.
Can you define Nephilim for the audience? Something to do with an angel, right?
Yeah, well, there's a general religious definition that's always been circling around, but you have to, you know, again, I expose people to new information. You have to be half Turkish by your male, you know, by your male father has to be full Turkish, so it makes you half Turkish, and you have to have a Caucasian female as your mother. That hybrid is what produces Nephilim. And Nephilim is an ultimate threat to Yahweh and a certain insectile / reptilian rule that would be known as the mainstream religious god. And that's the reason why there's such a frown upon Nephilim, because Nephilim is the ultimate threat to the esoteric religious order of the Demiurge, if you want to call it Demiurge, look at it from a Gnostic point of view. The Nephilim are the ultimate threat, because Nephilim have this uncanny ability to combine divine and human strengths together that even surpasses the gods' capability of overcome big obstacles. Because humans have an extraordinary ability but are limited by their like, look at the ingenuity of humanity, period. I mean, incredible. Mankind can produce anything, but mankind just doesn't, it's not long-lived, not that wise, not that bright, but the innovation for mankind, the potential to adapt, there is this extraordinary potential that's locked in the in gifts within man. And then the gods, extraordinary power, extraordinary feats, you know, just producing the impossible, but they lack certain traits that somehow completes mankind. It's kind of like the gods drain off mankind, and the mankind need to worship the gods. It's kind of like a relationship where the farm animal and the farmer need each other. Because the farm animal, the talking animal, mankind, needs guidance, needs divinity. And someone could say, well, hey, I'm an atheist. Well, an atheist is drained by vampires too. I mean, mankind is bred to be a battery. That's what mankind doesn't know. And one can live in denial, all this. Well, that's okay. It doesn't matter the opinion. The vampires know exactly where they sit. You know, it's just like a chicken disagreeing with whether they're going to be your plate or not. It's doesn't matter about the chicken's opinion. It's just a matter of, hey, that's what it's bred for. You can have any opinion you want. The result is the end of your life, and an entire man's life is another being's meal. Because when you die, you yield on incredible bursts of energy that practically go on to the nuclear level. I mean, on a certain hyperspace level, when your soul transitions, it's like it's a type of extinguishing yield of enormous energy that vampires feed upon. And a vampire can be physical or deceased and astral. Many, you know, just because you're a vampire doesn't mean you live forever, doesn't mean you're immune to death. But if you have a vampire soul and you incarnate again, you may or may not necessarily be born a vampire, but you will have a vampire soul that will eventually lead its role of activation. So lots of vampires are born, but they may not experience their full capabilities. They may experience dormant capabilities, and it may be sometimes parallel with mutantism, you know, being a mutant. But when they're activated, that's when it really gets extraordinary. Most vampires do not get activated. It's a very small thing. There could be actually 2-3 million vampires in the world, but you know, to activate them all, you know, in recycling reincarnation, it'd be too much a drain on the system. There can only be so many thousands of vampires. Probably, you know, a few thousand would be max for the hierarchy of energy. Because if you make everything sucking dry, well, who's producing the energy? You know what I mean? So, anyway, back to the Council of Nine, they make decisions and they control and maneuver world events. It's likely they want to control what we have is like a kind of like a farm. And now, how they interact with the Council of Five, you know, you heard of we talked about the legends of the Council of Five, which I believe were an offshoot. And I do believe that they were, like the Anunnaki group, I don't think is the same as it was back then as it is today. The Council of Five are trying to weaponize mankind, you know, to become the mutants and the superheroes and the super friends and the X-Men. Those are the guys who are working on super soldier programs, while the Council of Nine were the ones who've been working on the vampire programs, which is another form of super soldier, and they may have actually had some of the first super soldier programs called vampires. They specialize in vampires. Vampires are the thing. I'm still trying to find out if they created the first vampires or they were the first. I think they were. I think it's a little bit of both. You know, that all modern vampires are a variation of the Council of Nine. And but they control the vampire population and community to make sure that, because see, lowercase vampires still gather energies for uppercase vampires to still collect off of. So there's a master, that master has to use energy. That's what all occultism is. Witchcraft, everything, it's all to gather energy and start to circular cone all the way up the chain of the power. And so the vampire is the ultimate collector of power over witches and sorcerers and, you know, things like that. So the ones who live the longest are the ones you can tell collected the most power. And now we can't say that the average lifespan is like 500 years or 1,000. It depends on how long you hold on to the shade. So technically, you can hold on to the shade indefinitely, and there's no stop of how long you can live. Now, I'm already an immortal, whether I was Council of Nine or not, so I kind of get to approach the group with an advantage. So,
are you a Nephilim too?
Yes, I was born one.
Okay.
Being half Turkish and half Caucasian, and it's not like the Turks are not Caucasian. It's just that there's a special breed about them. Because that's directly linked to fallen angels, which the legends of the fallen angels. And then, so I'm kind of like, that's where the hybrid comes in, the Nephilim. And so with a long line of like Perseus and Hercules, Theseus, and there's other, the Greek outlook of what a Nephilim is. That's why the Bible says in Genesis chapter 6 about the Nephilim were heroes of old and men of renown. So, because it's a special gift on how that moves forward. So, but do you have any questions on all that?
Never heard that definition of a Nephilim before.
Yeah, that's the real definition, and it's been in secret society. It's largely a vampire capability. That's what a Nephilim is. It's basically, Nephilim is the ability to drain, refine life force on such a personal level.
And does then, draining life force damage the person you drain it from?
Yes, it will and can. Yeah, like a fall of damage is called your lifespan, why you only live to be 80 or 70, or why people get cancer mysteriously. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not going to get cancer because, you know, you're eating radioactive food or just whatever, but that's the whole point of it. The whole environment was designed so you're always yielding life force energy until you run out. It's all a containment. It's like a farm.
What do you have to do to get on the Council of Nine?
Well, I kind of strongly believe that you have to have a past history to be on the council. They do prefer their own. If you've ever been on it before, they do probably keep track, so I don't think it's any mistake. It's like if you've had a passion for something all your life of what you're supposed to do, you know, you eventually will catch up to it if you really have that true, true drive. You know, it's like you look at a Nephilim, you know, when they're born, they hear legends, hey, your father's Zeus, and hey, this and that. And finally, when they become an adult, they synchronicity rolls their way, and boom, they're involved in a pattern that's eventually guided by a higher system. So the Council of Nine, I do think that they actually call out to their own. It's in a sense, they kind of pull strings where they pull you to you, you know, you to their council. And it's not like the other way around, but it will probably be a mutual, like, you're either born with a journey or you're not, and it's in you. Now, I've tried to figure out, it's like, okay, why is it Council of Nine when they're actually many times they've been referred to as 12? Well, there may be three members or supporting members. You know, I can only imagine, but there's a reason why the nine has like an infinite force, that nine make major decisions, and it always influences man in the most peculiar way. And are the nine cosmic, or are they just earthbound? As far as I know, they're just earthbound, but I've heard rumors that they may actually have more power than over this dimension. I can only speculate, because I think once I'm in it, and it also probably depends on how long you've been in it and on what kind of authority that you eventually gain.
Well, what did you have to do to get in it?
See, that's the whole thing. It's nothing you do. I think you're chosen. Like, I think you have to have past membership. So back then, what did you have to do to get in it? It would be maybe, okay, 5,000 years ago, what did you have to do to get in it? Well, you probably have to be born of a certain genealogy at the time just to even have the membership. And I think that sometimes when maybe you lose membership when the whole council or the gods say, this is not working out. You know, you're welcome back, but you need to go out and learn some things in the world. And or it could be that maybe I left and this is time to go home. So, and plus, as a new member, maybe I can give some fresh insight, fresh thinking into the group. But I tried to look. It's like, okay, who's making the decision? Is it the shades, or is it the vampire, the human? What level is making the decisions? That's going to be left undetermined. I do think, I do compare, like, remember Venom that came out?
Yeah, I didn't see it.
The symbiotic relationship between the entity and the guy. Now, I wouldn't call it a virus per se on like a purely molecular level, but I can say minimally it's an energetic level.
What's a shade?
Go ahead.
Can you define shade for the audience?
Well, the shade is it's more like entity, and let's see. An entity, I don't know what it's made of. See, that's the whole thing. It's like I have to study it and observe it when it becomes part of me. But I do think it's a living life force on its own. I do think it is an entity. Is it alien? It could be. Very well could be alien and extra-dimensional.
Yeah.
So maybe in an updated interview after I've received it and merged with it, that's when, but I do think that the venom, the whole venom thing is very, very base and aligned in it. Now, it's not like it's going to act like the venom where it's going to reach out and strangle somebody or make you gulp somebody. It's not like that, but it's something that moves within you and you move with it, and the symbiotic relationship enhances both life forms into a greater form. But it does, I do think that it, not only does it make you a vampire, I think you have to be a base vampire in order for it to do so the entity doesn't solely eat you up or swallow you. I think you have to be a vampire just to even embrace. Now, I don't know if that's a rule. That's just my theory, because one thing I have found out is they're all vampires. But they're like vampires on steroids.
What does the Council of Nine do? Why is it significant?
Well, it's the same thing as what the Anunnaki did. Asgardians, the Olympians. They farm humanity for what they're worth. And in return, they yield humanity certain functions, kind of like the way a farmer does in the farm animal. They see themselves as the parents of mankind and the controllers of mankind. So is it like a negative society or positive? It depends on your view.
Okay.
I think I'm going to have more definitions down the line.
What got you interested in becoming a vampire?
Oh, let's see, out of logic. Because I just think that being an ordinary human is not the full potential of the soul. I also believe that becoming a vampire, it's the way you can survive and neutralize your losses towards the matrix, because you lose life force, you lose will, you lose it all. And it doesn't make sense that if you're going to be within the matrix, why not become something that's more aligned with the matrix rather than being the food of the matrix?
Yeah.
That's why.
There were some vampires in the Matrix movie. They were considered anomalies, though.
Well, the Matrix is vampiric in nature. And like I've portrayed in previous shows, that when you look at the Matrix, it's an entire feeding ground based on pure sacrifice. Like, even the hypothesis of you can't be saved without the sacrifice of Jesus is still based on Matrix. It's where the Matrix demands sacrifice or you can't move forward. And the sacrifice has to pay for something. Something has to yield something. Something has to gain something. It works just like economy. Finances. There's give and take, and the Matrix knows what it demands. It's like farming. The farming works just like Matrix, where you have to produce so much seed to produce yield, and that yield of that carrot or whatever has to have water, has to have time, needs minerals. So I think that's how our souls work at. Our souls work at, like, the reason why you're seed in life is you're a seed planted. And then when you grow and then you decay, well, that whole framework from beginning to end is all, there's all some kind of vampire force, matrix force, that's that constant work at chiseling away at your life force. And then when you're done, when you're dead, well, that completes like the pumpkin cycle. You know, your seeds have done what it is, everything you've done, and you've done your purpose. And then in the afterworld, all the light, all the energy that you've accumulated to your soul are still going to be a feeding ground. That's why in the afterworld, if you end up in hell or Hades or whatever you want to call, it's all based on what do you have left over. If you don't have any fruit left over, then you're going to experience hell, because now you got to pay the price. Because if you don't have enough life force on you, you have to pay the price. It's kind of like if you don't have enough rent, you go homeless, you pay the price of the elements. So that's where the reptilians and the hierarchy of the astral plane, that's when they feed upon you. They get the leftover of your energies. Just like you yield energies in life and death. And that's why you're cycled. You're constantly being used for all levels of yourself. And then when you're done, you're thrown back into the reincarnation cycle to do it again. Works just like farming again. You know, the seed grows into a pumpkin, the pumpkin yields new seeds, and the pumpkin is consumed. The whole point of its ingestion, the sow, is to begin the consumption process at the end. You have to, you're food. That's what we are. That's the reason why we're replanted over and over again. We're recycled for the same reason that seeds are recycled. And the reason for all the wars, again, and the Council of Nine is not the only group that does this. I think the Illuminati period understands this. And the Illuminati knows that they have to create certain wars, they have to create certain sacrifices, or they don't rule. And the whole energetic system will end up consuming us all. Now, does that make the Illuminati the good guys? Well, no, maybe not, but yet it makes them, they know the sacrifice has to be done. You know, you hear the, we need to, our troops have created a sacrifice for your freedom. That's all ritual speak. Your freedom in the Matrix is an illusion.
Wait, you were a soldier,
right? We have to lay down so much blood for our soldiers on the other side, and that blood's not spilling. It's not paying for our sins, or it's not paying for our next way of cycle to survive in the Matrix.
Weren't you a soldier?
Well, I was in the Navy. I was in the Army Reserve for 1 year, National Guard for another year, and then I switched to the Navy for four and a half years. But why do you think the whole military system doesn't make sense in these endless wars? These endless wars pay for the sacrifice. In fact, there's vampires that specialize in that, and the Rothschilds had vampire technology. The Rothschilds are like lower base vampires, but they did have access to upper base energy transference. And so vampires do reincarnate as Rothschilds. Like, that's the reason why they keep everything so inbred, and they may each have like 3 or 4 kids. There's a formula they have to lock in certain powers to keep their family in power. If they don't do it, their family becomes insignificant. They have to be really careful how they lock in the vampire reincarnation trait, where the great-grandfather or the great-great-grandfather will reincarnate as the great-grandson. They keep, like, 30 or 40 souls rotating and close-knit families. You know, and I'm not going to sit here and say exactly 30 or 40, but you know what I mean? They keep it per family. They have a number of souls that they keep recycling with each other.
Didn't you fight Timothy McVeigh?
Yeah, I fought him in boot camp in Georgia. Little did I know he would go on to become a great monster later, but I don't think he was behind those Oklahoma City buildings. I think he was the front guy. I think he was recruited to Black Ops, and he made connections, and they realized how psycho he was, and they wanted to use him as a front. And I think they faked his death. When they put him to death, I think they faked his death and moved on. Mm-hmm. And he hangs around. So I think after his fake death, he hangs around with families they go around producing disinformation to front groups. Like, if you're like the Truther movement, and you know, if you're exposed to 9/11, these families, which are related to Nazis that came here, like the Goldbergs and Rockefellers and certain Nazi secret families, they all interbreed and they produce descendants that actually work for them to create disinformation, to maneuver and misguide certain truther groups. And you'll see them pretending to like be anti-war. They're doing this for the families, the wealthy, wealthy witchcraft families. And they'll just try to direct certain movement groups to make sure it loses momentum, or it carries hope, but it doesn't do anything. So that way, nothing really gets done. They kind of grind down. They may even pose as crazies trying to represent truthers, just so mainstream public says, "Gosh, those guys are crazy. Maybe I better not question 9/11 or things like that." You know, it's interesting that Timothy McVeigh was out there handing out brochures outside the Waco compound area. So he definitely had super soldier written all over him. I wouldn't call him like a super soldier, like he had super capabilities. He was definitely black ops, but he's there to carry out disinformation, and he had a role, and he's done with that. I don't think he had a major role in anything. I do think that, because I've seen a photograph of him around that's supposed to be happening not long after 9/11. And he's in the background, a photograph actually got wind of him. That's the only one I've seen. But yeah, he had a screw loose, and there's a reason why they recruited him. They knew that there was something wrong with him. And they like to look for guys that there's something wrong. Kind of like the CIA types, they want to look for scapegoats that they can really drag their name through mud. And he doesn't care. He's probably crazy, and you know, probably paid lots of money to change his identity and start a new life after they raked him through the soil on that. Just like Bin Laden, you know. I don't even think Bin Laden died. I think that was a fake death. They said that, you know, he had kidney dialysis just 2 months, within a couple months of 9/11. He couldn't have pulled it off. He's a CIA asset the whole time. But I do think that maybe he could have been a clone. There's a lot of disinformation around it that he's a Saudi family member. And as we know that they took the Saudis, his family, racing them outside the United States on planes before this stuff really gets hot. There's a reason. But I do think... it's interesting. I know some people may laugh at this, but if you really look into Bin Laden and Obama, it's interesting. We don't hear anything about Obama until Bin Laden disappears. And it seems like they play two sides of the same coin. Even the names sound too much alike. There's a quasi-Muslim rhetoric that surrounds them. It's just very, very weird, and I think they're almost like two sides of the same coin. On an esoteric level, there's a Benjamin Krim, I think, that was talking about like the Maitreya, the coming of the Maitreya. It's like a new age coming of one of the Buddhas. He talked about it for a long time, and it seems like Obama fit a lot of the things that the Maitreya is supposed to do. So... that's when we come into like extended masters and what their real agenda is. Sometimes extended masters will actually come in as disinformational masters.
Yeah, the first time I saw an Obama sticker, I thought it was a joke.
Makes you want to think of, you know, those pies, those moon pies. Yeah, it seemed like a joke, doesn't it? It seems surreal. But that, you notice they're making everything surreal now with Trump and Obama. That even the last names are really surreal. And just, I mean, Trump, I mean, nobody on this show can possibly believe by now with how much disinformation you've seen out there, you actually favor that there's actually a real president that worked for you. I mean, we have to know by now that Trump and Obama work for the same forces. that this is not a genuine rivalry. There's this pretend rivalry, like the ultimate good guys behind Trump and the bad guys are behind the Democrats. There's this big myth out there by the right saying that Trump is somehow with the good guys and they're cleaning house. We found proof that he wasn't draining the swamp. He likes to hire illegals and work for them personally, and yet you got people defend, well, he didn't know, or they'll deny it altogether. Well, he didn't know. You know how businesses do. Yes, he knew. He knew. He knew exactly what he was doing. But Trump is real high up on the Zionist level, where he's so in debt that he can't borrow money in the United States anymore, and now he's in debt to the rest of the world. He owes China at least $620 million in growing interest. He owes those Russian oligarchs. I mean, how can you say there's no collusion? Of course there is. But one thing about the deep state, if the deep state really wanted to talk, they would have already said, hey, Trump's an Illuminati. He's one of ours. This whole rivalry between the deep state and Trump is a farce.
Yeah, the Zionists have tentacles everywhere. They're trying to make it illegal to boycott Israel now.
Yeah, they're using one to use Facebook and all this, but you know, they wouldn't have any criticism if they'd be on the right side of the humanitarian part. You know, they're obviously lifting hundreds of Palestinians every day out of their homes, and yet they say the Palestinians are terrorists. It's like those Palestinians already lived there. They had wide open arms. For Israelis, for Jews who were moving there, they had wide open arms before 1948. But those Palestinians, little do they know that they've become a new terrorist, they've become the target of this growing Israel. And it's like, it's crazy. I mean, if you did unbiased research, you'll find that Palestinians in the 1930s and 40s felt sorrow and had big hearts for Jews coming to Israel. They said, yes, there's plenty of land, sure, come on. And as soon as the Zionists started coming in, boom, it all became deadly. And it's just a nightmare, you know. And then you have this redneck right-wing mentality that believes that, yeah, they're just terrorists. We need to wipe them out. Like, really? When an average of anywhere from 10 to 30% of the population, depending on what village you're talking about, so an average of at least 20% of the population are Christian. Oh, we didn't know that. Oh, I need to do more research on that. I'm like, see? And it's interesting, we talk about, you know, Hezbollah, it's got this negative, nasty taste in Western media. Well, the problem with that is Hezbollah has actually protected Christians and prevented IDF and Zionist mentality from killing Palestinians, whether they're Muslim or Christian. Because I've even seen two different Christians who are Palestinians talk about how Hezbollah and so-called radical Muslim forces have actually prevented them. They'd be dead if it wasn't for the protection of Muslim groups. And now, in no way am I promoting that Islam is somehow the savior of the world. It's got its problems. And I do think it was created by the Vatican long ago, but there's this demonization of the Arab world. And what they do is, you've seen it, where they find the worst case scenarios or the worst cases of Islam or worst cases of these Arabs, backwards Arabs, trying to do bizarre illegal things, and then it creates like, hey, this is what your average Muslim looks like, and that's not necessarily true. And you also have enough where there'll be actually disinformational Jews. And again, I'm not posing anything anti-Jewish. I'm just trying to tell Jews, don't go with the Klan called the Zionists and the rabbis. Don't go with that racist mentality, and I won't have a problem with you. But Jews who actually join the Klan, their own Klan, well, yeah, you become the enemy. You know, it's just like a white person. If you join the KKK, you become the enemy. If you're a black person, you join the Black Panthers and say you got to kill all blacks. It's all the same mentality. You know, there's racist groups. So that's why I think it's so unfair to peg all Arabs and all Muslims as radicals. That's the furthest from the truth. That's not even real. And Because, like, when you go in Europe, these rape gangs, well, first of all, you're not really told exactly who this rape gang is. You just, there's this mentality. For all we know, they're IDF soldiers that's pretending to be Arabs. And then you also have to look into, there is a criminal element within the Muslim world that were in prison, where every country put them in prison. And when you sit there and undermine the entire government, and like where they don't have any infrastructure anymore, like Libya or Iraq or somewhere like that, Sudan, when you sit there and undermine where even the government can't keep the criminals in there, what's these criminals are going to sit there and go upward. Well, they're going to be part of the migrant caravans that are going to be part of the criminal element. And so when our troops are down there raping and destroying and literally raping their women and kids, the CIA even admitted it. Yeah, U.S. troops raping kids in front of their mothers, right in Iraq. What do you think these people are going to do when they come to Europe? You think they're going to like, oh, we forgive you, let's throw petals? No, their worst element's going to come back and do revenge. And then we act like Europe is under invasion. Like, what has Europe been doing for the last 400 or 500 years? They've been invading everywhere. I mean, it goes back further, maybe even the last 1,000 years. That's all Europe ever did. And we love our wars. In fact, we define our history. Wow, that Charlemagne was great. He massacred and killed. Look at this. Look at Constantine. Look at this. Europeans have done nothing but brag about their conquerors. But if a Middle Eastern guy ever got, you know, his 2 cents back, oh, he's a terrorist. Then let's look at almost every single, in fact, I'm saying almost as a conservative, every single Arab crime, major crime that's happened in America was a false flag operation that has been proven. You don't have any major radical Muslims in this country doing crimes. That's all fake FBI stuff. I even watched a video about an FBI agent says, we have to invent terrorism or we lose funding. So what does that tell you, you know? But the thing is, the FBI will actually purposely find, you know, these Arabs and Muslims who are disgruntled. They wouldn't have done a crime to begin with, and they'll purposely, hey, we'll give you money. Hey, we'll give you weapons. Hey, will you do this? And many Muslims groups just walk away, but some just like, oh, really, you know? Well, the thing is, you know that 9/11, or before 9/11, there was 1993, the attack on the World Trade Center. That was all, that was assembled and went off, and it's created by an FBI agent who pretended to be a Muslim coming into a Muslim group. That means not a single hand, the Muslim hand, actually assembled that weapon that went off. Not a single one, but yet they got blamed for it, and the FBI did it all just to blame them. You know, the guy, the other, where, you know what, who got on the plane, he was escorted by an FBI agent, okay? So see how these things don't add up? They'll even hire Arabs to do jobs. Oh, this is just a security thing. We'll pay you such and such. And next thing you know, the drill will go live. It's not a drill anymore. And they'll just set up the Arab, hey, you're under arrest. And sometimes the Arab thought he was doing his country a service by testing security. Hey, this is just a test. Anything to kind of get people hating Arabs. I mean, that's what we've done in this country. All we do is hate one group after another. Now it's the Mexicans' turn, and it's the Arabs' turn. It used to be the Irish's turn or the American Indian, and we end up growing ashamed of all of our hate that we've done, but yet, or the black man. We used to hate the black man. Now we got to hate somebody new. It's just this grand initiation of every group being hated. But the black man, remember, the black man was a terrorist back in the 1950s, the 60s, there he was called a terrorist. But yet generations have gotten so old that it's been forgotten. So, See, that's my view of it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. Definitely one worth putting out there. It's a pretty rare point of view to be in the media. I think the media
is there to protect the oligarchs. The disinformation is required for their rule. And anybody who leans to the left or the right is obviously compliant. We know votes don't work, so you know they try to create this thing every 4 years, how close the votes were. It's obviously rigged. And this this whole thing of no Russia collusion, just ask Europe. Europe could tell you all the time Russia interferes with elections. This is not nothing new. China, Russia, the United States, Israel, they all have interfered with elections. So when you point at Russia and say, no, don't blame Russia, blame Israel, that's the whole thing. You've got just this mob mentality, oligarchs that work in these governments, that's all they do is interfere with elections worldwide. I mean, here we are, we pretend to be the victim, but yet we're interfering with dozens of elections around the world every year. All over Africa, Latin America. Look at Venezuela right now. I mean, you know, there's a new interest in Venezuela. It hasn't been new, but it's renewed. Because of their oil reserves, their fantastic oil reserves, are like literally record-breaking oil reserves. So, the all-bald American eagle from the north says, hey, we got some liberating to do. So that's what we got to do. We got to control them, because the United States foreign policy is all about controlling someone before they get out of control.
Well,
we don't want any economy outgrowing us.
It's about controlling the oil, too.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Because, see, you know how oil used to be based on a dollar? Well, Nixon took us off that. And now switches where now it's a petrodollar. It's all based on oil reserves now. I mean, that's the unofficial way with fiat currencies. Who controls the flow of the oil of the world is what currency rules. And that's the reason for all the invasions, or at least that's the front reason, not the occult hierarchy left. I mean, it goes in hierarchies, but that's the front reason. They control the oil because the oil is the resource of the world. We control the drugs because that's a resource. We control the weapons. We want to sell it everywhere. And we also want to know who we sell it to, so that way we have a slightly better weapon if we ever go to war with them. Plus, it's arms sales.
Yeah, I mean, Israel's the master of false flags.
Well, because Israel, they're Zionists. That's a branch of the Illuminati because they get paid big bucks to do black ops when the Illuminati wants to sign them. They did it for 9/11. I mean, there's some satanic groups and other groups that do false flags too, but yeah, Zionism is a branch of the Illuminati. And, you know, Zionism used to be, it did have like humble beginnings until the Rothschilds took it over and they made it their agenda. Originally, lots of people don't realize that Zionism started out as like trying to tell Jews, you need to fit within the Christian world. You're out of date. You're out of style. You're not going to go anywhere. If you ever want to go anywhere as God's people, start to live like Christians, update like Christians, and fit in within Christian society. That's what Theodore Herzl proposed. Then, which is kind of a good idea, but you know, it surrendered to the Christianity. But then you had some satanic Jews come in and say, "Hey, we want to pretty much run." The little history of Jews. We want to become the destiny. And they believe that their hand is the destiny of God. In fact, their IDF soldiers are sometimes referred to as angels or little gods because of how much power they have. They kind of like, they see themselves as modern-day angels protecting the Jewish people.
The Mossad thinks they're the hand of God. The Rothschilds openly
call themselves, they openly call themselves the Elohim. Or at least in private, they don't. They're not open to the world, but, you know, they openly refer to those as the gods of Israel. Yeah, the Rothschilds believe they are the gods of Israel. You know, the Rockefellers believe that they're the gods of Christianity, and especially like the Protestant movement. not so much as the Catholic gods, but they see themselves as the gods of flesh, and that's the reason why you see Rockefeller money going to certain branches within Christianity, because they use it as a front group. Anytime we're doing Christian aid to Africa or wherever, it's usually a Rockefeller front or Rothschild front, just to get their banking system going. So lots of people who donate to Christian fronts are just donating to more CIA projects. Now, I always say this, I'm not trying to get anyone killed or anything, but, you know, one thing to say, you know, I think I've said this thing. Why don't let the Illuminati just say, hey, we produced disinformation? Why don't the Republicans and Democrats say, hey, you know, but they can't do that. They can't tell it like it is, because the people will then hey, that's not what I paid for. That's not what I want my tax dollars. So that's the purpose of fluoride and TV and chemicals, is to dilute your brain and make you compliant and make you a proud citizen and go USA, USA, and just become brainless. Because a lot of Americans think they're great, great U.S. citizens. Actually, a U.S. citizen is a member of a corporation called the United States of America. It's a corporation owned by the Crown Temple there. So if you're a U.S. citizen, you're not an American. You're part of the Crown Temple. You worship a foreign power. It's the same foreign power that controls the IRS, all that, the Federal Reserve. These are foreign powers. 1776 is no good. We lost the war. And we brag about we beat their butt sometime, but no, we really lost it. George Washington had to borrow $6.2 million from the same people he was fighting in order to prevent his soldiers from having a mutiny, because they were fighting unpaid, kind of like a government shutdown. They're working for free. So the British paid those soldiers through Washington, and it is a farce. Our forefathers were a farce. They were disinformational agents, I think, trying to hide the revolution and create a artificial revolution that we think we are under, that we pop fireworks and think we're just all that, and we're not. We've been conquered. We've been declared a state of national emergency ever since 1933. We were technically conquered before that, but 1933 it became official. We filed bankruptcy, and finally, the bankruptcy lasts until 1938, and that's the reason why we're going to war for everybody, at least on the front level, because we're too in debt to the Vatican and to the British Empire to do anything else. Those Jesuits would make our trillions of dollars flood and destroy us if we started rebuking their orders. So, yeah, the real America was called Al Morocco. It was existing for thousands of years before Columbus came. The United States of America is a corporation that wanted to do business on Al Morocco, which is an extended protection under the Ottoman Empire. It's all in the Congressional Archives. George Washington honored Al Morocco and thanked him for protecting American business overseas, because the British were trying to hurt our business. And we're so hard on the French. The French were pretty much our own. They're our real European allies. They gave us the Statue of Liberty, which is probably a cult of nature, but as a country, the French has always been our side. It seems like when the French are not, they kind of disagree. They, oh, you're traitors, you're weak, you're this. It's like, actually, the French have the best record on file, being our greatest ally. But that's the whole thing. We always refer to ourselves as America. It's like America is like it's an occult force. It's the Atlantis of the occultists. Americans have not initiated into the real meaning of America. In fact, they've handed us all the debt to pay all that back, all the trillions.
Okay.
So now this doesn't mean I hate America. This just means that I think Americans are misguided by the corporation that controls them. And see, that's where the Council of Nine comes in. Back to that, this disinformation is provided by the Council of Nine on purpose, with the help of other groups. The Council of Foreign Relations, and these are just hierarchies on the way down. So this is why I'm really excited. Now, I may be considered a big mouth joining the group, but I don't know how they're going to respond. So maybe my membership could end up sore. Who knows? But maybe I'll be enlightened. I have a feeling I'll be enlightened why the whole control grid has to exist. That'll be the irony and the justice in the end. I do kind of have that tendency that despite everything I've said, that mankind is engineered, that if you do everything wonderful, they become spoiled and they become very undermining, because you'll find that the more kind of freedom you provide people, the more assholes they become anyway. It seems like it's just kind of weird, because when people don't really have that much to worry about for their next meal or anything, they lose their humility. So that's why that's kind of, I wondered that there's a reason why man is suppressed, because man has an arrogance that if left out of the open, he would actually destroy himself. Man needs to be regulated, because man, I think, would undermine self. And man is naturally selfish. And some people says, hey, that's not true. I would give, and I do this. And, no, really, leave it off. If you don't regulate mankind, mankind will not really look out for its future. Not really. I think we have to be regulated, and that's a sad thing, you know. It's kind of like deer. They have to be regulated. If you don't hunt the deer so often, they actually overpopulate. They literally do. Hunters know that. That's a fact. I'm kind of wondering if that's the same thing with man. Now, if someone disagrees, I can understand, but you've seen the nature of man. Like, if you don't regulate, well, how many pedophiles and how many people would murder? If you don't actually keep people in check, how many people will really go off the hook and actually exploit their fellow man? They would be glad to take up that vacuum of where the Rothschilds used to be. You know what I mean? So I just think that there's a hierarchy, and it's natural. It may be unfair. It may not be right, but I think that's a psychology, because I think man has too much reptilian in him to know any better. It's kind of like dogs. If you don't neuter enough dogs, you know, they're going to sit there, they'll multiply throughout the neighborhoods, and now you have a bunch of dogs that can't be fed. So, you know, maybe it's part of us have reptilian in them. Maybe part of us is just don't care. But I can see why these hierarchies exist. What do you think about that?
That was a good speech. Let's see. We covered a lot of stuff.
Do you have any, more questions about the Council of Nine or anything, any kind of viewpoint about modern events?
Well, I guess the Super Bowl's tonight.
Well, we know the Super Bowl is always, by nature, it will have a cult. It will have a cultism written at halftime, like it always does every year.
Yeah.
It'll have an Illuminati message for us. And second of all, we know it's rigged. The whole structure is all controlled by betting and mobster activity. Do you actually think they're going to leave that to chance? No. Especially in the second half of the season, they're going to see those numbers line up, and they're going to shake the tree for what it's worth. They're going to make sure more of the bets go for the house than any other way. So the more it starts to get to the end, the more likely it starts to be controlled in the outcome. The reason why I know this is it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact that there's actually a court case about it, where a guy says, hey, he found out it was fake, and the court case ruled against him because the NFL says we're only here to entertain you and provide you a seat. We never told you it was fake or real. You never asked. So it goes like boxing, you know, in sport, lots of sports, that it's not a true element of competition. It's, if you want your career, you got to be able to drop the ball when they say to drop it, or, you know, let the guy run through when you could have tackled him. That's the reason why certain fishy calls happen, I think, with referees, certain plays that just all of a sudden look upsetting that don't make sense. Because I do think that everybody knows it's rigged, and they sign probably secret contracts. And if they start blabbing, not only do they lose their little football player career, they probably have something happen, you know, outside. Like they can get killed. They can just be found with a drug overdose. Maybe they weren't even doing drugs. If they seem to be balking, like, hey, I want a touchdown. I want to be the star. And the coach is saying, no, you can't. It's not part of the script. Or maybe you'll be exposed for dogfighting. You know, maybe you'll be exposed for rape. Something will happen where your reputation's going down. Now, you can probably still be probably one of the rigged system guys and still behave like think you're above the law. You know, maybe those cases exist, but sports is rigged. That's why it's like WWE. Just go in there and root, but don't actually believe this is an event. That has a natural outcome.
Yeah,
that's gonna piss off a lot of football fans, but that's a fact. energy at home and in the stadium. That's a lot of yield. Well, that the Council of Nine and Vampire groups like that. That's a lot of emotional energy being yielded. The one thing that feeds the vampires is loneliness, fear. But positive emotions can feed them too, like love. Vampires love to be loved. Like one of the greatest vampire powers you can attain is to be loved by a virgin. A vampire can be loved by a virgin. It's perfect power. Because see, when a woman loses her virginity, she loses some primordial power in her. When she has a child, that's when she can never regain her soul is permanently fractured. When you have a child, you become fractured because you lend all your life force to the children and the grandchildren. So one rule of vampires, do not have children. That's another form of a Nephilim. A Nephilim is supposed to be like not have any children. That's the whole idea, at least that's the idea. A true vampire Nephilim. Now, if you do have a child and that child has to become a vampire, the vampire is still kind of a dream, but yet at the same time, if that child becomes a vampire, some of that energy can be fed back to the father if both are vampires. So it's not a total loss, but that child has to become a vampire. But it's recommended the safest way, don't have children if you're a Nephilim, because you fall for the mortal scheme of having children, then you have to feed all your will and life force to your children, because... in fact, every Nephilim, they have to wait for their father to die. Some Nephilim actually kill their fathers so to gain the father's power. So I know it sounds backwards to the public, but that's the matrix for you. Is when you have children, all your energy is getting lost. That's a big no bueno. If you ever want to be an immortal, do not have children.
Okay.
One last thing about these caravans coming through and all this, the immigrants. If you don't want immigrants, then don't sit there and destroy their homes. A lot of our weapons are actually going to their very homes that are destroying them. With our trade sanctions against Venezuela, well, no wonder some people are going to leave and want to go upward. Our weapons are actually going to help, MS-13, which are actually. Going through all kinds of neighborhoods and villages and towns, trying to control them, and they end up killing a lot of Latin Americans, and that's the reason why you have these people going wanting to head up north, because you got criminals, and like I said, our trade sanctions causing poverty and misery on purpose. So if you all think that America is not responsible for anything, guess what? More than half of this, we are responsible, because that's what we're there for. That's the reason why we train paramilitary crews, to make sure that no nation is ever successful on their own, and why we keep them always funneling drugs and never anything else. We keep them at a criminal base element. We don't let these countries grow. We don't allow fair competition. So that's why these people are coming in like an asylum, is because we already control everywhere else, and we make ourselves look good, and then we act like we're the victims. Hey, we got immigrants. Well, guess how it all starts to begin. And so the U.S. dollar's on top of it and made to give value, and then we're pitching about, hey, these immigrants are coming in and getting health care and all this. Don't be mad at the immigrants. They're just roaches trying to survive, just like you're a roach. We're all trying to survive, and guess who's not telling the truth about why they're really coming up here? It's because we're the only front left where they can get a job, because we destroyed the rest of the economies where the only thing they had was like their peasantry life where they're barely surviving. When you destroy that, well, what, you expect them to stay where they're at and die? And you know what? I brought that up to my work. I brought that up, and you know what the supervisor says? Well, that's why we need to depopulate. I was like, that's what the Georgia Guidestone said. And he says, well, that's all right. I was like, guess what? Did you know you're on that Guidestone too? That means you and your family are on that. He says, oh, well. I mean, that's how stupid the response is when you actually get people informed about what's really going on. They don't really like their fellow man. So you'll find how monstrous people really are. So anyway, that's my input. I guess we can call it a wrap on the show if you want. But I will keep you all updated on the Council of Nine here, but they are a control group on a major energetic level. And but there is a real high amount of quantum force they have on reality itself. So that's why I'm really, really excited to kind of get on the inside. I've been waiting for years on this one, and it finally showed up in 2019.
Yeah, maybe you could point out all the Super Bowl stuff later when you notice all the occult stuff in it.
You know, I hate to be like the mask, you know, I'm not trying to emasculate myself or demasculate myself, but I'm not even going to bother. I don't really watch. I'm probably not even going to watch the halftime. I mean, I don't even have cable. I don't even bother. If I happen to notice it by chance, maybe, but there's just been agenda. I mean, if anyone's been looking at stuff a while, there's been agenda there halfway each time. There's always, you'll notice they always have some kind of Satanist, a Beyonce, Lady Gaga, something. There's always someone of a satanic agenda right at halftime. Who knows what they got this year, but there's always a catch in their symbolism.
Yeah, I couldn't watch Lady Gaga to look away.
I kind of believe they're men. I think I've recently come in the last few months believe that they're guys. They're trainees.
Lady Gaga is an intersex.
An insect?
Intersex. I think that's the PC way of saying she's part man, part woman. Like, she openly admits to it. So, yeah, she is a man.
I mean, when you look at her little bikini tush and everything, I mean, it looks normal, but there's something wrong. I mean, now I'm starting to look at it, I just kind of wonder, it's like, they're trainees, and then they're probably clones, and God knows what else, but the trainee phenomenon is like, it plagues Hollywood. Be careful what sex symbol you like. It may be a trainee. Trainees may actually be living in the White House. Like, we know Obama's wife is a trainee. I think Mrs. Trump is a trainee. If you look at her feet or hands, she was doing nude scenes a while back, and I think she was a sex slave as a gift from Illuminati to Donald Trump. And so I think trainees plague everywhere. So
yeah, underestimated. Michelle does have the body of a man. And Lady Gaga admits that she's part man.
Wow.
So, yeah. So Lady Gaga's public about it.
I've even begun to wonder if Oprah is. There's certain, I mean, everywhere. Yeah, music, Hollywood, in between. It's just that the trainee thing is taking over. Like, what's that lady, black lady in sports that's pretty dominant in tennis? Does she go by, what, Venus, or what's her name?
I don't know.
Well, anyway, I think that's a trainee. You look at it, and trainees are now trying to come open into women's sports and trying to dominate.
Yeah.
So, it's a third. I think that's part of the New World Agenda, too. But, oh well, that's me being paranoid.
Yeah.
Well, we can call it a wrap if you want, if you can't think of anything else.
Okay, yeah, it's been a while. Maybe we should have another one soon. I'm getting tired.
You bet, yeah. Like when I get that entity, that shade, I'll tell you my experience there, and so...
All right. Well, it's been a supersoldierforum.com and ypxnews.com interview. Please check out the websites. Thumbs up and subscribe. See you in the next video. And this has been Molecule Man and Nate Gray. Thank you.